Today with Sarah McInerney, weekdays from 10 on RTE Radio 1.
Now this morning, creches across the country will reopen their doors to children for the first time since the lockdown in March. But while many parents will be happy that the childcare services are back up and running, how will the COVID restrictions impact on the creches now? Well, Evelyn O'Rourke is at a creche in Kilternan in Dublin this morning to find out how it's all working. So Evelyn, what's the situation there?
Well, you probably hear the little clients in the background singing there. I'm at the beautiful Treehouse Montessori here in Kilternan in Dublin. And as I speak to myself, Sarah, I'm wearing a mask and my shoes are off. I'm in my socks. And this is all in line with the new creche guidelines here. And I'm here with owner Elaine Dunn and her team. And this morning, as you say, reopening their doors after more than 3 months. And they've been working so hard to alter the creche. But it's all been done as colourfully as possible. So lots of balloons around and bubble machines. But the changes are significant. I mean, for example, under the new guidelines, the handover procedure will be different. Parents used to bring their children into the building, but now they'll hand over the children outside and at the door. And in some facilities, children brought by car, for example, they'll be collected from the vehicle by a creche staff member and brought inside. So as well as that change, the handover, pick up and drop off times will be staggered. And once they get inside, children will be divided into these pods of between 6 and 12 children. And you'll even have a situation, Sarah, where siblings will be kept together in a pod, even if there's a gap in the ages, which is a change too. So the layout is a little bit different, and Elaine Dunn, owner of the Treehouse Montessori, gave me a tour of the changes in her facilities.
Hi, good morning, Evelyn. You're very welcome to Treehouse this morning. Can I ask you to put a mask on, wash your hands and take off your shoes, please?
Okay, so I'm a parent coming in the door. We're doing this for real. Okay, so my shoes are off and you're putting a mask on me.
Well, we are trying not to let parents in, but unfortunately, when you have children who are very distressed coming in the door this morning, it may be necessary for parents to come in. That's why the masks are there.
Now, you've a lovely, bright, clean kind of creche here. It's gorgeous and it's full of balloons and full of colour. But what is different?
We've had to divide the room. So we've got two pods. So we've 12 children on one side and we've got 7 on the other side. And the other thing that we're finding difficult is we have to keep families together. So you may have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old in the same pod. We always wore black with a blue jacket over it. But now we have scrubs. So we've cotton scrubs. So we have our yellow and blue tops this morning and our trousers on. Everybody's going to be wearing a visor and, if necessary, masks.
All day visor.
All day visor.
How do you feel about the changes at this point? I mean, it's day one. God, it's a lot to take on board, isn't it?
I suppose it's necessary that we do have to do this. This is for the health, safety and well-being of the children and the staff and ourselves. So it is very necessary that we put all the protocols into place. And the other thing is, if you don't have all these protocols and you are closed down because the COVID is in, you may not get covered by the insurance for business interruption.
Do you feel you've got enough help in the sector?
Absolutely not, I'm afraid. One of the biggest gripes I have at the moment is children with additional needs have been completely discriminated against. While we're open here today, we have 9 children across our business that have additional needs, and we have none of them coming back, unfortunately, because we don't have the funding. We don't have the funding for the SNA.
Finally then, can you describe the kind of conversations you've been having with parents? You know, how would you describe them in general? Or is every conversation completely different?
Oh no, absolutely every conversation is different. But reassurance for the parents, that's all I've been doing for the last few weeks, is ringing parents and talking to parents. It's not an easy job this morning, and it'll take about 2 weeks for the children to settle back into the routine of the day.
And lots of concerns being raised by Elaine there. That's Elaine Dunn, Evelyn. And there has been a mixed reaction from creche owners about the changes and how it's all going to affect the business.
Yes, I mean, Sarah, many creches, as you know, would usually stay open over the summer. But owners have said that they aren't ready to open yet. They're going to wait until September. I mean, only last week we heard representatives from the sector telling the Rochtha Special Committee on COVID-19 that the industry was going to need long-term support in the future to ensure their survival. Now, at this point, there is a €75 million support package. It's been made available to help the businesses cope. But there, uncertainty is the word I keep hearing. And just in terms of figures, for example, Early Childhood Ireland say that they are expecting 1,700 centres to reopen this week, with a further 2,800 due to open in September, if all goes well and if it makes financial sense for them. But it is shrouded in that uncertainty, with the prediction the creches will be operating at a 50% capacity. So it really is an evolving situation, I suppose.
So finally then, the Treehouse opened its doors just over 2 hours ago, after 3 months, to welcome their children back in. How is it all going for people there?
I have to say, there is a lovely buzz around and parents seem to be very pleased at returning. But just to note that even here, they're only expecting a 17% capacity today. So, you know, the numbers are low, but they've obviously had to increase staff numbers as well. So it's going to be a real learning curve for everybody. But the parents that I spoke to this morning, mainly very relieved to see the doors open, but very happy that Elaine and the team had been in touch with them. They felt very reassured that the protocols were in place and that their children would be safe. But, you know, even more importantly, happy here as well. And you probably heard the singing in the background there. It does seem to be buzzy and going well so far. So here is, you'll get a little flavour of the atmosphere here this morning at the treehouse. And then you'll hear from some parents giving their reaction about the changes to creches today.
Come on, are you coming in, Pat? We go wash our hands and take off our shoes. We get ready for a class. Into the bathroom we go. Welcome back, miss. Great to have you back.
So, Fiona, you have just dropped your children into creche after how many months?
I'm trying to think of since February, so 3.5 months. I think it's fantastic for the children. I think they need this psychologically. It's fun for them to be around their own people. I think they need their own age group and their own little people to be around with.
Now, you are a frontline worker, so how have you managed over the last few months?
The hospital I work in, Beacon Hospital, I've been very flexible with my off-duty, and my husband has been able to work from home, obviously, with the corona, so we've actually been able to manage childcare with that. But as I said, without the hospital and without my colleagues, I wouldn't have been able to manage.
Now, you're obviously in healthcare, so you have, I suppose, a certain confidence around all this. But how did you feel about bringing the children today?
We had a little bit of anxiety, but then when you look at the bigger picture, like Elaine and all the staff here have done so much to ensure safety for the children. Ellie, very, very excited. Jensen, because he's a little bit younger, was a little bit weepy this morning, but excited now that he's here, but a little bit nervous.
She's really excited about getting back to see her friends. And we're really excited about getting back to a normal day's work done, albeit from home at the moment. Yeah, she's been really missing her pals over the last while. So, yeah, exciting times all around.
As a parent, were you uncertain at all about coming back, or how did you feel about that bit?
No, well, I've full faith in the guys here. They've a great setup put in place, and they've informed us all the way through in terms of the procedures that will be in place. So, very comfortable with that the guys here will have a good operation in place for everybody to remain safe.
Now, you're smiling. I mean, it's been a bit of a juggle, a bit of a struggle the last few months.
Yeah, both myself and my wife are, you know, working full time, and thankfully that's been remained the case for us through the lockdown. It's great just to be able to get back to, you know, a normal day's work. Bizarrely looking forward to getting back on Zoom calls and everything this afternoon with a little bit of peace and quiet.
All right, well, lots of happy voices there. Evelyn O'Rourke, thank you very much for that report. And indeed, Stephen in Finglas has texted. He's happy too. He says, "Hi, Sarah. My son, who is autistic, returned to his July provision this morning and I could not be happier. I feel like not all, but most children with special needs have regressed over the last 3 months." Now, as we know, today begins phase three opening, as Evelyn has been discussing there. And in one of the other businesses that many of us are eagerly awaiting coming back are the hairdressers. Brian O'Connell, where are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm here in Mark Vison's Hair Salon and Barbers, which is on the main street in Ballincollig in Cork. It's a 3,000 square foot premises, and clients, I can tell you, began to arrive here about shortly after 7:30 this morning. And if you haven't booked in already, well, it's going to be about 3 or 4 weeks before you'll get an appointment. I mean, just as an aside, you must be sick that I'm in a hairdresser's before you, are you?
I really am. I really, really am.
Yeah, that's great. We should say this is one of the lucky hairdressers, because some we know won't be able to reopen today because of financial reasons. Danielle Kennedy, I noticed, who's the incoming president of the Irish Hairdressers Federation, she was outlining in the Irish Examiner this week 5 alone that she knows of won't be reopening. So it's been a long 14 to 15 weeks for many of them, and of course for the clients, as you well know. Looking around here, I mean, it's very strange. It resembles a kind of a clinical setting more so than what we would typically describe a hairdresser's as being. All the staff and clients are wearing masks and visors. Areas are separated by perspex. So it's all very surreal, but all very necessary, of course. And for those waiting months for this day, I mean, they don't really care, the clients, what extra measures they have to take to reverse some of the disastrous home DIY cuts and colours that they've been arriving in with. Now, let's begin with one of the first clients who arrived into the salon here, Mark Vincent's, shortly after 8 a.m. to be greeted by Colette.
Morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Colette.
Are you blessed to be back?
I am delighted. Absolutely.
Good.
So you're one of the first clients in this morning. So you've filled out your questionnaire online for us.
I have.
So we had a pre-COVID, a pre-appointment COVID questionnaire, just checking all the boxes that you've been fine, healthy, you haven't been in contact with anybody with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Everything seems a little bit different.
It does.
So we won't be taking your jacket. It has to go into a plastic bag. You'll be given a mask. But you're wearing a mask.
Luckily, you're wearing a mask.
So yeah, we're delighted to see you. Great to see you back. And unfortunately, I can't give you a hug.
No hugs.
We can't do hugs. No. So I'm going to bring you right over to your section if you're going to look after you.
You've been eagerly awaiting today.
Oh God, I have. Look, I have the wild woman look, the natural look.
You didn't do the kind of home DIY job now, did you?
No, 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 I didn't touch it. No, God, Fiona would murder me if I did anything. No, she would, yeah, the stylist would kill me.
So what are you getting done today now?
Cut, restyled, now I suppose styled again, and blow dried.
Great to be coming back, I'd imagine.
Oh my goodness, oh God, the relief, you know. I mean, this, at least the only good thing about it, that I was of an age where I wasn't really, well, nobody was going anywhere, but I wasn't. I was definitely cocooning. So I haven't been out, so I haven't been anywhere, so nobody has actually seen me.
So what's the plan after today now when you get the hair done? You go for a coffee, I'd imagine?
Oh God.
Will you parade up and down Patrick Street?
Oh God. Wish I could.
The nightclubs are closed, of course.
They are. You will actually have to go to Mahon Point, my first time in months. So I'm looking forward to that, to be able to look normal to the world again.
Ah yes, the wild woman look is gone. The wild woman look that so many of us are familiar with, unfortunately, at the moment. A lot of talk too, Brian, about increasing the cost of appointments and why that's the case.
I suppose businesses like this have had a lot of costs to absorb over the past few months, even though they've been closed. So there will be additional costs. I spoke with the co-owner, Mark O'Brien, about that. I interviewed Mark as he was applying a colouring, I think that's the phrase, is it? To Bernice, and Bernice told me she has been waiting for today for weeks and weeks.
I suppose you've been waiting for this day for a while, have you?
I have. I have been waiting now for 3 months. I'd have came in at 6.
6 o'clock this morning?
I would have.
And for you, Mark, what's today going to be like?
I suppose today it just allows us to get on with it. I mean, there's been so much in the media that we were coming back early, we were back, we weren't back, we were coming back, they were... Dr. Tony was deciding what was the best thing to do, and I suppose this morning it just allows us to get on with our businesses and to move forward in a positive way. Rent and the revenue and VAT and all of those things that are all still there, and we, you know, as I said, must move forward and get on with what we do. And
so as I look around here, there are Perspex screens separating each client. What else is new? We're all wearing PPE, obviously.
Yeah, so masks are compulsory, so the staff wear masks, the clients will wear masks, we have disposable gowns, there's a sanitisation wash of your hands when you come in the door. So we've a big premises here, we've about 3,000 square foot.
And if I want to book in and get my roots done, when would I be looking at an appointment?
So if you don't have an appointment now, like, it could be about 3 weeks before you get one. So people probably missed about 2 salon visits, you know, in the lockdown. So they would have been here, you know, like twice in between. So they're coming now, like, with hair way beyond what it normally would look like.
And is this why the issue of cost has come up, Mark? That there's some talk that it'll be more expensive now because you'll have more work to do.
I often say to people, and I give this analogy, and if you had a tiler in your house and you were tiling 3 square metres and you were tiling 9 square metres, which is going to be more expensive? And it's the same with hair.
All right. Well, finally then, it's not just women who are eagerly awaiting the reopening today of hairdressers and barbers. We see lots of queues on social media outside barbers as well. Tell me about the men.
Yes, I mean, there was a couple of men lined up outside here a while ago. On my left, barbers Kean and Jack, they have something like 20 appointments alone today, and men have been arriving here since about 8 a.m. looking like they just stepped out of some remote jungle somewhere, and all lining up for their appointments. So a couple of dodgy looking home DIY cuts, I have to say, including my own, which is going to have to be rectified at some stage over the next day or two. Hopefully I'll get to book in maybe tomorrow or the day after. Although I have to say, even though my hair looks like a bit of a cross between Beyonce and Brian McFadden, my wife has been channeling her inner Peter Mark, and provided she doesn't put her prices up, I'm quite happy with her, actually.
Will she be applying a colouring, Brian? That's the question.
No comment. Right. Are you saying I need one?
I did. Look, I'm not saying anything. I'm just asking the questions. That's all I'm here to do. Brian O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me. And good news, I think, for a lot of people as barbers and hairdressers are opening around the country. We'll be back after this.
Today with Sarah McInerney.
Well, I'm joined now by Professor Paddy Mallin, who is Professor of Microbial Diseases in the UCD School of Medicine and also a consultant in infectious diseases in St. Vincent's Hospital. And Paddy, thank you very much for joining me this morning. So we heard there from Brian and Evelyn, a lot of happy people because the creches and the hairdressers are reopening today. And also today we'll see a lot of restaurants, cafes, pubs, campsites, museums, gyms, all of that opening as well. What are your concerns, though, around that and around the transmission of the virus as a lot more people will be interacting?
Well, I guess first off, it's great to see this happening. The population have been waiting for a number of months and have been working very hard in terms of the lockdown to try and get us to the point where we can have these openings. So I think with the background rates of community transmission as they are at the moment, I think it's a fantastic to see that these businesses are getting a chance to resume. And provided that you see from the people that were on the call there, you're seeing a lot of responsibility being taken by business owners in terms of trying to make sure that their businesses are running safe with, you know, masks being compulsory and a bit of innovation within childcare with kids being put into pods and whatnot. I think that provided that care and innovation continues and people are monitoring what's happening to the background rates of COVID-19 in the community, I think that we should be able to continue to do this safely within that business context.
So is there a possibility then, do you think, that we could actually avoid a second wave?
So there's a lot of factors that will contribute, not so much to a second wave. I don't think it's really we're going to be looking at waves. We're going to be looking at resurgence in the number of cases. And to be honest with you, I think that the resurgence in the number of cases is going to be driven by two things. It's going to be driven by reintroduction of the infection into the country from people bringing it into the country. And we've seen both Tony Houlihan and Philip Nolan referring to that over the last couple of days as being what they perceive to be the major threat. And then the other thing will be people not adhering to the advice that's been given, which works, and that's, you know, physical distancing where possible. And if you can't do physical distancing, you should really be wearing face coverings. And there are two big issues that need to continue for the foreseeable future. If we can do that and we can limit the impact of imported cases, then I would be hopeful that we can keep on the trajectory that we're on at the moment for as long as we can.
Okay, so on the first issue that you've raised there, the quarantining and people coming into the country and importing cases, talk now about this green list idea that you'd have countries that you wouldn't have to quarantine from if you were travelling there when you came back. You wouldn't have to go into this 2-week quarantine. Would that work, do you think?
I think it's going to be tricky. I think that the Minister for Health has referred to it over the weekend that this is a scenario across Europe that is changing almost daily. And I think being able to develop green lists for people, I think, is a great idea. Being able to develop these sort of safe corridors of travel between specific countries is really the way to go. But it's all contingent on numbers remaining steady. And at the moment, there's a lot of uncertainty about that. And the risks for travellers, if the numbers are increasing in a country that you travel to, while you're there, for example, if you go for 2 weeks and while you're there, there's an outbreak, there's a risk that you may not be able to get out of the country. There's a risk that you could end up being quarantined when you get back. There's obviously a risk that you could get sick when you're away. And then there's the risk that your insurance may not cover that. So I think if we take a big list of priorities of what we need to do over the next sort of 4 to 6 weeks in the country, international leisure travel is probably fairly far down the list. And I think what we really need to be doing is focusing on reopening our economy safely, such as the childcare, such as getting ways to get kids back to school, such as ways to get all of these small businesses open again safely. And that would be the priority for me rather than focusing on overseas leisure travel, which carries with it a significant risk, not only to the person, but to the country.
You said the second big risk then, as you see it, is people not adhering to the advice around social distancing and face masks and things like that. And you can see how that would happen if everything starts to reopen and the country starts to just look and feel a bit more normal. So how do you keep this in people's heads?
Well, I think there needs to be clear messaging about it, and I think it's great to see in the last week to 10 days that there's definitely been an alignment in terms of the messaging. Very, very, very simple messaging, physical distancing, and if you can't do physical distancing, then you need face coverings. There also needs to be a bit of thought put into how you can enable an important public health measure to be brought into effect. And there's two ways of doing that. You can facilitate the public health measure by making masks more readily available, making them cheaper, in some cases maybe making them free. And then there's the other part of the coin is making sure that you enforce it. So, for example, on public transport, there really needs to be visible enforcement if there's going to be a compulsory mask wearing in public transport, and that needs to be brought in as soon as possible.
Yeah, I believe Anne Graham from the National Transport Authority said that there won't be enforcement this week on public transport. Would 1 week be enough to cause problems?
This virus moves very quickly, and all you need is one person going into a crowded environment to cause a lot of onward transmission. And what we don't have at the moment, if you consider public transport and say person, just say I have symptoms today and I walk on the packed loose without a mask and start sneezing or coughing over people. At the moment, if I end up getting diagnosed on Wednesday with COVID-19, there's no way for me to be able to identify all of those other people on the loose or on the tram that I may have exposed. So I think that we do need to move rapidly on this. The key to managing anything in a pandemic is rapid action. And I think that if you are going to bring in a compulsory mask wearing, it needs to be enforced rapidly. The other thing that really needs to be brought in, and this is a very good description of it, there's talk of bringing in an app that will help us all to engage in this sort of contact tracing exercise. For example, if you are the person that's on the tram with me and I've coughed over you on the Monday and I find out on the Wednesday that I have COVID-19, if you have the app, you can be notified that you were close to me. And I think having those sorts of things rapidly brought in is going to make a big difference to us controlling the infection over the summer months.
So should all that have been done and put in place before we had this big reopening today?
That's really a discussion for the policymakers to make. It's very easy for people like me in the science community and the medical community to say that everything should be perfect. But the flip side to that is that we have an economy that's taken a huge amount of damage. And we do need to return as quickly as possible to limit the economic damage. So there needs to be a balance. But I think I wouldn't be sitting waiting for example, an app to be perfect before introducing it. There's always ways of introducing these measures and then working on the measures to improve them as time goes by. So I do think there needs to be a balance, but we do need to keep up the momentum on this. We can't become complacent in any facet of our approach to COVID-19.
Pubs, or some pubs at least, are among the businesses that are reopening today. Would you go to a pub yourself this week?
I'd love to. I'm working all week, which means I won't be able to. But if I could get a spot, I think that the way that it's working out, that you get a 1 minute 45 booking that you have to sit down and eat, I would probably be picking where I would go. Personally, I would probably feel uncomfortable walking into a pub, sitting down within a meter of a stranger and not knowing where that stranger has been or what their symptoms are. So I think there is going to be a level of consumer confidence that's going to need to return to this. And I think this week, if we start to see pubs opening and the guidelines not being adhered to, for example, if we start seeing some pub owners acting irresponsibly or people behaving irresponsibly within the pubs, I think that's going to dent the confidence for a lot of consumers to actually return to that type of socialising.
Should pubs who are acting irresponsibly be closed?
Well, I think it's like it's exactly the same as mask wearing on trams. I think that if you're going to be bringing in, if you are going to be bringing in recommendations, they need to be enforced appropriately, because otherwise it sort of does make a mockery of everyone's efforts. The people who are the traders and the customers who are behaving responsibly, if you do get people that decide that they're not going to follow the rules, it ruins it for everyone and it threatens everyone.
And if we see anything like that on a greater scale than the odd pub here or there, Paddy, if we see a lot of the restrictions not being enforced in pubs around the country, is that would it be the case then that you would have to return to the restrictions very quickly?
So, or
close them again?
I think realistically, people need to be prepared for the eventuality that some of the proposals that are being brought in may not work. There's no guarantees with this. And it may be over the coming weeks that we do, if we do see a resurgence in cases that are linked to specific activities, that those activities would need to be reversed. That's going to have to be a facet of life moving forward. There needs to be that degree of flexibility with the public, and I think the public realise that. But that's why it's really vital that people behave responsibly over the next few weeks, because everybody wants to see the economy getting back to normal. They want to get to the hairdressers. They want the kids to get to creches. We all want to get to the pub and get a pint and sit down and have a bite to eat. And I think that we can do that safely, provided that people act responsibly.
All right. Professor Paddy Mallon, Professor of Microbial Diseases in the UCD School of Medicine. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Today with Sarah McInerney. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.
Now, sporting organisations can resume activities from today as the country enters phase three of reopening following the COVID shutdown. The GAA has announced a restructuring championship with pre-Christmas All-Ireland finals, and Liverpool were crowned Premier League champions as Arsenal, Chelsea, Manchester City and Man United booked their places into the FA Cup semi-finals over the weekend. Well, to discuss all these sporting matters, I'm joined in studio now by RTE Gaelic Games journalist Damien Lawler and also Lindsay Peat, who is Irish rugby international and former Dublin GAA player. And thank you both very much for joining me this morning.
Sure.
So let's see, where even to start, because sporting action resumes from today. So that's good news, I think, for a lot of people. It is good news, really, isn't it, in terms of what's starting and what's not?
Well, it's fantastic news. You know, as a player, I think we've been very apprehensive about whether we would even get back up and running in the year 2020. So from a rugby point of view, I think we look at this phase up until from the 1st and 19th of July, looking at sort of reintroducing skills, tag rugby, touch rugby. So that's a huge motivation for people who haven't been playing. And then the hope would be that we'd start to introduce contact from the 20th of July. And I know my own club has a target the 21st of July up and running for full training. So again, I know I can speak for the RFU, we've a roadmap. Obviously, they'll adhere to any government changes over this and work closely with medical staff. Rod McLaughlin has been looking over that for us, for the RFU. And again, clubs will be advised for a COVID officer. They have to have a COVID compliance officer, and they have to complete all of our education and training for that. So there's huge guidelines and resources around that as well. So yeah, it won't be just straight back in.
I think a lot of people will be wondering how exactly it does work in terms of contact, you know, a contact sport like rugby, and how that works with social distancing.
I know. Well, the good thing for us actually is Australia are in their winter season, so they're back with contact. So we'll actually have a great close eye on them to see how this works. But again, you have to adhere for the outside. We will have social distancing. We'll have hand washing stations. We'll be washing equipment. So again, there's huge compliance around what is being instructed by the government and advised by healthcare officials. So yeah, we will be feeling our way in the dark. There will be changes along the way. People have their own responsibility when, as a player, to come back and as the clubs. And I'm sure that goes across the board for all sporting organisations.
Yeah, it's likely, Damien, to be a pretty slow and gradual process.
Yeah, I think it is, Sarah. I think Lindsay's right as well. Like, there's a huge amount of information out there. The WhatsApp there for the last 10 days is driving me mad. I've had to mute nearly every group I'm on because people are taking it so seriously that everybody's filling up their questionnaires, their health questionnaires, the e-learning course you have to fill up if you're a coach or a mentor to a juvenile GAA team. There's also kind of like modules that you have to go through as well. So it'll be a very phased, staggered approach back. And even though pitches are now open, not everybody's back. Mm-hmm. People are taking their time. They are taking it seriously. I think they have to. I think it applies to general society as well, Sarah, that you have to take personal responsibility and you have to make sure that your health is okay going into a premises and your children's health is okay too. Do we know what's going to happen? None of us have a clue, but you have to try and play it as safely as you can. I think sporting organisations are trying to do that. I mean, the amount of written documentation out there at the moment is absolutely incredible. Like, there's nothing left unsaid. Mm. So it's up to the person, the coach, the mentor, the player to put themselves through that process.
And will it be up to, in the final analysis, the sporting organisations to make sure then that all of this is being adhered to?
Yeah, I mean, covering the story for the last 5 or 6 weeks, the one person I never wanted to be would be the COVID officer / COVID supervisor. But in fairness to the likes of the GAA, they've reduced the amount of paperwork and admin there. For example, we feared at one stage, fear is probably the wrong word, but you'd have to get your temperature taken on the way into a training if you're 37.5 back home and don't come near the club again. All that has been kind of reduced a bit, but there is a massive onus now. groups of 10, mm-hmm. groups of 15, different areas of the field. It's been done right as best we can.
Even travelling to training, like people are not carpool, you know, toilets won't be open, changing rooms for now won't be open. You know, walk to training, come togged out. So there's huge advice around this and it is up to players. And to be fair, we will probably have a compliance officer for each of our teams within the club to make sure everyone is you know, yeah. and not that it's like strict, you know, people have been taking COVID seriously, but the compliance officer there is to help that everyone is aware of their responsibility and adhering to that. And as a club, then, as you know, we have responsibility.
And what about yourself and your own injury? Will you be back training when it comes back?
Please God, I think COVID has been pros and cons, you know, positive and negative for me. I got the time to recover from a broken leg. I was pretty quick getting up my feet, but because of having no physios available and hands on, I've probably a lot of scar tissue and stuff that needs help to push on. So really good. I've been back running. So
you're talking to one of the most motivated athletes in Ireland. I think there's no question of that. Just in general about getting back as well, people's mental health,
yeah,
people's welfare, people's lifestyles, just to have a bit of green grass available again is huge, isn't it? And have the gates open and a bit of community feel back again.
Bit of crack and what we're used to, like, you know, we connect as people through sport, you know, socially, and we would have probably been very reliant. So to have it come away probably makes you strips it back and you realise how valuable those people are and your teammates and the club camaraderie, and it brings to the forefront all the values that we would have got through sport. Not that we would have forgotten, but maybe there was a bit of dust on them and we needed to, you know, to clean them. So it will be fantastic to rejuvenate people, and I think this phase now, all going well, will really motivate both grassroots and international elite athletes. So.
Yeah, and speaking of crack, you're a Liverpool fan.
I am.
You've had a good week.
Are you a Liverpool fan?
I'm not.
I sit across from a United fan, so I'm going to take every opportunity now to gloat.
A long-suffering United fan of nearly last 4 or 5 years
now. But you've
had
14 straight wins, is it? So we're doing well, but it's been 30 years' wait, and we won it in style when City, you know, it was probably the epitome of their league season. You know, they'd be good, be bad, and they slipped up away to Chelsea and we celebrated. But I think Jurgen Klopp was sort of, you know, asking his supporters to just maybe celebrate under the guidelines of COVID. So it's been hard, but it's, you know, to be fair, they've been very worthy. As much as I'm a Liverpool fan, I think they've been very worthy champions. And 30 years is a long year, a long time to wait for such a big club, you know, steeped in history. So,
All right. Well, I wanted to ask yourself, Damon, do you think that they were worthy champions?
Yeah, they were. I mean, the football is top class. The manager is full of charisma.
He's brilliant.
The players are full of flair. They like to have a go, and I think there could be the makings of a little mini dynasty there if he stays put for a few years.
Did you see his video?
The dancing one?
Yeah.
All right. I'm afraid we're out of time. We'll have to look at the dancing video off air indeed. Damien Lawler, RT Gaelic Games journalist, and Lindsay Pete, Irish Rugby International. Thank you both very much for joining me.